Locked On Nuggets. I'm your host, Matt Moore, senior NBA writer for the Action Network, and Nuggets insider for 104.3 The Fan in Denver. Make sure to check out all of the great Locked On podcasts at Locked On NBA Net. Great stuff across the network. The playoff season is here. You're going to want to check out all this stuff. It's going to be a fantastic time to listen to all these podcasts, even for the ones that are, you know, looking at their future. Check out on the Wolves and see how Malik Beasley's doing, and doing pretty well, as you'll notice from pretty much every non-person that doesn't actually go to the games at Pepsi Center. We're going to talk about Malik tonight, about that situation, because it continues to percolate in the minds of fans. We're going to talk about where the team is at. We have to start with the loss in Cleveland. So I'm in a kind of a trap here, because as an outsider, not being a Nuggets fan, I am often accused of being too harsh on the team, which is funny, because there are media members that think I make excuses for them and that I'm too nice to them, that I should bury them, especially after the losses to Golden State and then to Cleveland, that this is like, they're just clearly not a contender. So I have to like walk this kind of line in between the two. And you, as a Nuggets fan, are probably pretty pissed off because this team that made the second round and was one game of the conference finals versus a beat up to hell Warriors team, probably could have made the finals last year, has lost to the Warriors without Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, getting beat by Mulder and Pascal and Toscano-Anderson, and then got beat by the Cavs, who, to be fair, they had Kevin Love, who was pretty good, and Colin Sexton's playing really good basketball too. So you're probably pretty mad and want me to just like flame them. That would be like the standard response. So I have to kind of like figure out how to mesh together my feelings on this subject, which are complicated. I think I'll start here. I've done this. I've covered the NBA. I've been covering it for 12 years. I've done it professionally for 11. I started doing it a year after I started recreationally. I am a person that watches the whole season. I get into the regular season. I don't take vacations during the regular season. I don't step away. All of these things. I watch it throughout the year. And the one thing that has come up to me pretty consistently is March sucks. It is terrible, which is against what most people believe, because most people are sports fans and they follow a certain calendar, and it's okay, you know, September and through the Super Bowl is football season. Like, that's how it is for most of Denver, right? And then you get a little bit into the NBA and college basketball in, you know, February, and then March comes, and it's about the tournament, and the NBA's ramping up, and the playoff race, and who's gonna, you know, all the big teams are playing each other, because that's how the league schedules it, so that their big matchups don't get washed away by football, and then April is the playoffs, and then baseball starts, and, like, that's, like, how the calendar goes, right? And, like, you take off in the middle of the summer, because baseball is eternal, and all the other sports are over, and then you come back, and it's football season again. March is a horrible month in the NBA. I've talked to players and coaches about this. I asked them, what is the longest, what's the worst stretch for you? And some of them will say before the All-Star break, but I got a huge, when I did this question, I got a huge portion of guys that said the first couple weeks after the All-Star break until about the last week of March. The last like 2 weeks of March, you're into the, you know where you're standing. There's a higher sense of urgency. If you're in the playoffs, you're just trying to get there. And basically in March, you know, after the trade deadline, whether or not you're competing. Like, are you going for it or not? Are you in the playoffs or not? Are you a lottery team? Is it time to start playing your vacations? Like, the Bulls are checking out. The Pistons are checking out. Those teams are done. It's over, right? That said, the good teams that know that they're going to get in do not have the same sense of seeding that we do. I say that as somebody that tracks magic numbers every single night. I opened my magic numbers thing after All-Star and started tracking who is where and what seeds and what team is going to clinch where, etc. Okay? I've done all of that. The players and coaches do not care about seeding. They don't think it matters. The front office does. Okay? Front office very purposely last year, in coordination with the coaching staff, tanked the Blazers game to get the Rockets out of their bracket because they knew that they don't match up well with them. That would not happen this year because the Nuggets helped them get rid of Capella and gave up Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez for it, which, again, we'll talk about Malik in a little bit. What I'm trying to indicate here is, like, the teams don't really push. There's no sense of urgency. And in the NBA, that urgency is crucial. On the last podcast with Adam and I, the world's finest, we talked about the floor of this team not being high enough. On 104.3 throughout the week, on three different hits, I was asked, like, well, okay, they're going to win these next two games, right? Like, they got to win these next two games. And I said, no, they're probably going to go 1-1. They're going to drop one of these games to either Charlotte or Cleveland. Like, you could see it coming. And it made a lot of sense that it was Cleveland. I wrote about it on the Action Network because Cleveland beat them in the game in Denver. Cleveland has good guards, good power forwards, a center that can actually battle Jokic. And they just didn't play well against them in the first matchup, and now they're on the road. That doesn't always translate. Denver could have gone in there and smoked them. Do you have any doubt? This is the problem that I have with taking a lot from the Warriors game or from the Cavs game, is you, listener of this podcast, have watched or at least heard about and followed this team for two seasons at least of being an NBA playoff caliber team. They were the second seed in the Western Conference last year. They're the third seed right now. Are they worse than the Warriors and Cavs? No. They can lose to them. But I will tell you, the Clippers are going to have a bad loss too. The Lakers are going to have a bad loss too. March is weird and it's long and guys are tired physically and mentally. Just absolutely exhausted. So part of that plays into this equation too. And you can say, like, tough luck. Like, that's tough. Like, sorry, if you want to be a championship contender, you go all the way. And that's not true. This is the problem. Denver needs to be better than it is so it can coast versus the Warriors without Steph, Dre, and Clay. And versus the Cavaliers. Like, they need to be better so that they can coast, and they're not better. Now, look, this game was also a weird one, okay? Jokic had 8-8. He's quiet. Just didn't do anything. Like, it was a bad game for Jokic. He was disinterested and disengaged. I thought he was not disengaged. He wasn't necessarily like, I'm going to put the team on my back. He wasn't like super aggressive. He let the game kind of come to him. And look, Will Barton and Gary Harris had really good nights, and to me, that matters. Because, like, if they're going to go anywhere, they need Will Barton and Gary Harris to hit some shots. Like, they got to get dudes that can actually make buckets. In the beginning of the year, some people were advocating that Jeremy Grant needed to start power forward right away. Paul Millsap has never been popular amongst the casual NBA fans in the city of Denver. Because he's an all-star, but nobody's ever seen him in a highlight reel. And all the stuff that he does makes you better very, very quietly. So, instead, they wanted Grant to start immediately. And I thought it was preposterous and really insulting to Paul Millsap. And I maintain that it was so. Like, they were a great team with Paul Millsap, and they've been really good this year whenever Paul Millsap has played. The problem at this point for me is that I think that the starters are better with Grant. And more particularly, I think the bench is better with Millsap. Like, I think putting Millsap on the bench helps the bench unit a lot, because I don't think that Plumlee and Grant have any chemistry whatsoever. And Millsap pretty much has chemistry with everybody. There's nobody that Millsap doesn't flex with. He can play with anybody. He's been in the league so long, he knows how to play with everybody. Grant is much better as the athletic counter to Jokic, as the guy that does all that stuff versus Mason and Grant trying to do the same thing. I think Millsap's better in terms of providing screens and stuff like that and working in tandem with the pick and roll sequences of Monte Morris and when those lineups with Monte Morris and Jamal Murray. I think it would probably help. I don't think it's going to happen because they've got a lot of respect for Paul Millsap, and you don't bench the four-time All-Star making $30 million. And you can say, like, but they should. Okay, you could say that all you want. This is where I struggle, because there's certain things that just, like, kind of are. The Nuggets should have beaten the Cavs tonight, but they didn't, because that's not what teams do in March. And look, I am not here to tell you that you can throw this out and it's meaningless. It's meaningful in that they're not good enough to just breeze through. And they don't. And the bigger thing is this. Last year, remember how we talked to you last year about how, like, you got to enjoy this, that this isn't going to feel this way? It doesn't feel that way this year. And that's part of why the team struggles. they don't have the motivation every night to prove themselves. They proved it last year. They proved they were a good team. They got the second seed in the West. And the national media dismisses them completely because they have an unappealing superstar and they play in Denver. Okay? But the reality is that, like, they're a really good basketball team. Not right now. I'm not arguing that. But I just cannot take this and say, like, oh, they lost to the Warriors and Cavaliers, therefore they are worse than the Jazz or the Thunder, or, like, the Thunder have been playing, have been one of the best teams in basketball since, like, November 1st. The Nuggets are a better team. They lost to the Thunder, got beaten, got blown out. They're a better team than the Thunder. Now, I still think that there's a big danger that they could lose because their offense just simply isn't good enough, and it did not bail them out tonight, and that's a problem. But I don't know how to really reconcile what I'm supposed to do with this game. I don't know how to, like, look at this game and go, oh, okay, it's like, you know, this game proves that they're really in trouble. Barton, after the game, told Mike Singer, the Denver Post, he's not concerned. He's pissed off, but he's not concerned. Malone said the other night, we're all talk. We like to talk a lot. Like, this is all kind of part of it. Okay? They cannot find that gear. It is not there for them when they want it. They can't just snap their fingers. You would trade the losses to the Warriors and the Cavaliers for a comfortable 4-1 victory in the first round, would you not? I would, if I were you. I would definitely trade it. If they go up against the Mavericks in a 3-6 and just smoke them in a 4-1, they win the first game in Dallas and it's 3-0. They let them have the fourth one for the gentleman's sweep. That's an impressive first round victory that shows Denver has the gear that they're talking about. My concern, I would say probably Adam's concern, and the concern of everybody, is that they don't have it. They don't have it. Why don't they have it? We'll get into that. Locked On Nuggets, your team every day. Sorry I didn't record, by the way, on Thursday and Friday. I wanted to wait and see what their reaction was to these two games because I thought that I needed to see the entire set. Like, if I just come back from the Charlotte game, I'd be like, look, everything's fine, and then the loss to the Cavaliers. Plus, I had some stuff going on that I had technical difficulties with my computer, actually. But those have been resolved, and I'm back on a Saturday. So back to normal schedule next week. So we were talking about why the Nuggets don't necessarily have it. There is a theory going around that I think warrants discussion. Kisla wrote about it for the Post. He mentioned it. It's not the first time I've heard this argument. The argument is this, that the front office traded Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez and got nothing back. And that they got nothing back is an indication that they punted on this season, and the players know it and they're mad about it. And that's why, like, they're disheartened. And that's why they haven't been playing with enough emotion or pride or fight or effort or energy or whatever you want to use to call, you know, playing hard. Okay. One, I will just say this up front. I always think this stuff is ridiculous because they get paid to do this. Like, I'm very understanding of the drain of an 82-game season. I'm also very understanding of how hard this is. The NBA is really effing hard. When you watch it every day up close, you get a real sense of it. You get to see how much the guys' bodies are in pain. You see how much effort and pain goes into it. You see the emotions when they do lose a tough one that they care about. And you see that across years, and it gets to you just like, and you see good players just vanish because they can't make it, right? So the NBA is hard, essentially. However, you're paid to play basketball, and you're paid not to worry about who your teammates are. Like, the front office constructs the team, you play with the guys around you, and that's all you can do. And to a certain degree, it's like, look, the Nuggets didn't trade your best player. They didn't trade your second best player. They didn't trade your third, your fourth, your fifth, your sixth, your seventh, or eighth best players. They traded your ninth and tenth best players. If you want to throw Torrey to the end of the list, fine. They traded your eighth and ninth best players. That is not a significant move. This was the thing that happened, and when the trade went down, I told you this. I said the nine-man rotation is intact, and that's what they banked on. Now, if you want to say, like, they didn't make any upgrades, they just lost stuff. Like, one, we talked a little bit on this podcast at the time about they were in discussions for a major move. It's a major move that, not that one exactly, but I'm pretty sure the same package is going to be on the table the night of the draft and any day during July in free agency and after. They will go hunting for probably, I think, a major upgrade. That, to me, is more likely as a cause that of things shifting. It's more likely to me that they had to have some sort of conversation like, hey, you might get dealt pretty soon with a key player, and that shifted the entire locker room's assessment of, they don't think that we can get this done. We've been talking all year about how we're going to get it done, and they're going to trade one of us at the trade deadline, which is also not the way to think of it, because this front office is opportunistic. If they get the chance to do a deal, they're going to do it, and that's always been their statement, and they've never lied about that, and they've always been upfront with the players about that. Like, this front office, for as player-friendly as it is, and they genuinely like the guys, they're also very upfront about trying to prepare them for how the business is. So, let's talk about Malik. Malik's killing it in Minnesota. Just killing it. Like, could not be happier for that young man. He's been great in Minnesota, as they've lost most of their games since he got there. I am not being facetious. You have to kind of mention this as, like, how it works. Like, I can't lie to you and be like, oh, no, it doesn't matter at all. But, like, they are losing games still. The Wolves are still terrible. And they are, classifiably with the Wizards and Hawks, the worst defensive teams in the league. Like, they are one of the absolute worst. But look, Malik with the Wolves is averaging, he's shooting 8.6 threes per game and making 43% of them. He's shooting 49.5% from the field. He's shooting 50, 43, 80 from the stripe. He's averaging 22 points a game with 4.9 assists and 2.2 assists and 4.9 rebounds per game with 1.5 turnovers. Okay, so let me be real clear about this. Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell have been out for most of this. That's why Malik Beasley is getting so many shots, is Towns is out. When Towns comes back, all of his production goes down and he becomes a much different player. It's been impressive also that, like, look, the Saunders offense is entirely the reason I like the trade for Minnesota, I wrote about this, it gave them an opportunity to actually put shooters in a high volume 3-point system. Like, Malik was made for this thing. All defense, shoot a lot, no defense, shoot a lot of threes. That's Malik's game. I've said for a long time that I think Malik Beasley is going to be a really good NBA player. I said for a long time that I think that by the time he's 27, he's 23 right now. When he's 27, Malik Beasley is going to be a really good defender. He's going to have gotten past all the dumb things that he does as a kid. He will have matured a little bit. He'll pay a little bit more attention. He'll learn the scouting report. He'll play in some games that matter as a key player, and he'll get there. Malik was unhappy in Denver. The reality is that he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be there from the summer, and that's okay. He wanted to get paid. He wanted to get paid, and he wanted minutes, and he wanted shots, because that's how you keep getting paid. That's how you have a career in this league. So I don't blame him at all for not wanting to wait his turn to see if maybe he would. How was he ever going to get past Gary? How? Given the success that Gary's had with the organization. He would have had to outplay him for three straight seasons with limited minutes and then convince the front office not to get an upgrade. It was never going to happen. And you can point all you want, but, like, the Nuggets were not ever great with Malik on the floor. There were lineups. Adam's right. It worked sometimes. But I also think that one of the things that gets lost is, like, most of the lineups with Jokic are awesome. Like, he makes everybody really good, right? Now, do I think Malik fits with him very well? Yeah. Like, look, if Gary went out for the season, God forbid, and they had had Malik to step in and fill that role, I think Malik could have done really great and could have set himself up for a huge payday. But that didn't happen. And at the end of the day, like, if a player does not want to be in Denver, this front office is not going to keep that guy in the locker room. It doesn't do anybody any good. It's just a distraction and a pain. They got the offer they wanted. They wanted the first round pick. They wanted to get Capella out of Houston, and they took it. So you'll say, like, well, what about the other guys? I want to talk real briefly about this. They had serious intentions on Jordan McRae. I have seen guys just, like, if they were going to waive McRae, like, if this, let me put it this way. If they had made the trade for money reasons just to buy McRae out and waive him, it would have happened way sooner than it did. It would have been, like, immediately, you know, trade deadline was Thursday when they made that deal. By Monday, they would have bought McRae out if that was the intention. They really want, like, Jordan McRae and wanted him to be the spark plug off of the bench in certain situations. And then a couple things happened. One, McRae really didn't want to leave Washington. Two, he really didn't want to go to Denver. And three, he's really worried about his contract. He wants to get paid. He was perfectly willing to go to Detroit or Phoenix, whichever team would give him the most shots. He just wanted to make sure that he got minutes so he could score, so he could get his shots up, so he could wind up getting a new deal this summer. He was willing to do all that. He did not want to participate. Like, he did not value being on a playoff team. Okay? I don't think that's bad. Like, I don't blame the guy. He gets to decide his career. He gets to decide what's important to him. When he gets his new deal, maybe he can sign with a major playoff team and try and do it that way. But he wasn't going to get that opportunity here because of stuff we've talked about with how Malone treats the rotation and everything else. He clashed with the coaches from the very get-go. They're trying to fix the defense, and McRae's a really bad defender. He played for Washington, one of the worst defenses in the league, and he wasn't willing to buy in, and he was mad. So let him go. That's it. That's the story. It's like, they would have been better off with Shabazz Napier, but they didn't have room for him because he's a point guard. And you've got Jamal and Monte, and that's your playoff rotation. That's the entirety of your point guard minutes. When you factor in the minutes that Willow wanted to handle on the ball, you know, not let alone Jokic. So there just wasn't room. All of this comes across very much as a defense of the front office. I have seen this front office make screw-ups before. I do not look at what they did here as a screw-up. If this goes sideways, if all of this goes sideways because they traded Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez, it was never going to work in the first place. You cannot be so fragile of a team that the loss of a very unhappy young player who was a defensive liability completely collapses things. Additionally, I'm also of this opinion, and I'm pretty clear that this is something that Adam and I don't agree on. I don't believe that you can just be like, you need shooting. You just got to get shooting and just like put whoever in there and then fix the problem. It's got to be how the fit goes together. It's got to be about the combinations. And there is, to a certain degree, the money's always going to matter. And I know that that's frustrating to hear because you just don't want to, like, fans never want to hear that. If they want to hear, they can see the best guy playing. It's not how the NBA works. There's repercussions with the locker room, with the players, with the agents. A lot of that stuff goes sideways. Now, Gary Harris has also played really well for this franchise throughout his tenure and has earned a little bit of respect and has played much better as of late, including the game versus Cleveland. Not enough guys stepped up. So when we look at what the Nuggets have done, my biggest problem right now is like they're playing Kata-based Diop in the G League. That's ridiculous. Kata-based Diop needs to be splitting Torrey Craig's minutes. If you're going to play Torrey Craig, at least half of those minutes need to be going to him. I will note, tonight, this evening, in that game versus the Cavaliers, I did want to bring this up. Michael Porter Jr. played 15 minutes and 45 seconds. Torrey Craig played 8. 7 minutes and 47 seconds, to be exact. Porter played over 15. He was a minus 12 in net rating, including an 87.9 in the offensive. So, again, what will wind up happening is the conversation will be, now, Porter was 3 of 6, 1 of 3 from 3-point range. Like, he got 7 points. Wasn't him in his lineup. However, defensively, They were actually really good defensively. They gave up only 100, but they couldn't score in that stretch. But Porter played. Porter played 15:45. Would I like him closer to 20? Yeah. I don't know where we kind of get that. I guess you play Barton 5 fewer minutes and give those minutes to MPJ, and maybe that works. But look, the starters got torched defensively, and that's why they lost the game. Is, you know, Gary Harris had a 120 defensive rating, Millsap had a 121, Harris 120, Jokic 120. Like, those three guys had in the 120s. I've said this all of the year. If you're not winning your minutes with Jokic, you're not going to win the game. That's been the biggest difference this year than the last 2 years. They're losing a lot of the games in the minutes with Jokic. If you're losing the minutes with Jokic, the Nuggets are not going to win. We're going to come back and take a look at the Western Conference. I got some feedback that says you guys really like how I put the playoffs in perspective. We'll talk about that when we come back. Really spectacularly awesome stuff on the Locked On Network. Great podcast from every single team, including those in the playoff race, which we're going to talk about real quick. All right, so the Lakers are now a full 8 games ahead of the Nuggets in a loss column. I told you to let go of the dream of the one seed about 3 weeks ago, and that's definitely even more over now. That is donezo. The Clippers are now 2 games up in the loss column, which is not a lot. That's not a lot at all. If the Nuggets win the last matchup, then that definitely flips things considerably. Like, that just changes things all over. Because then you're able to catch up a game and clinch tiebreaker. And if you do that, then really everything changes. And as bad as things have been, like, look, they have a pretty good chance on Monday versus the Bucks. People are going to think that's crazy. Giannis is having a precautionary MRI. Even if that comes back completely negative and there's nothing bad in it, they're probably going to rest him because he's going to have a sore knee. He was sore the other night, and it's just very likely that he doesn't play. Even if he does play, it's not that, like, I look at the first matchup and go, see, Denver can beat them, because I think that was a weird game. I do think that Denver has a good chance because Denver plays at its best when its backs are against the wall. Backs are against the wall at home, lost 2 of the last 3. You're sub 500 since the All-Star break. You have the worst defense in the NBA. Everything is falling apart. This is usually when they tend to buck up and actually find their top gear. So I think that they can actually hang. However, look, they're 2 games back at the Clippers. I just don't know how many the Clippers are going to lose from here on out. They look really impressive. They're still 6 back of the Lakers in the loss column, so they're not getting the one seed either. But, you know, for them to get get the 2 seed, the magic number is 19, okay? The way to think of that with 20 games remaining is, even if Denver were to win of their remaining 19, let's say that they went 13-6, okay? The Clippers would only have to go, they would only have 13-6. You take the 6 and the 19, that's 13. So that's 13 losses for the Clippers. So they would have to go like 7-13. And like, that's not really doable. Or rather, sorry, 13 wins, 13-7. That's very doable for them out of their last 20 wins. So like 13-7 is completely doable for the Clippers. It's just going to be very hard, I think, for the Nuggets to catch. The Rockets, however, have lost. They lost to the Knicks. They got destroyed by the Clippers. And then on Saturday afternoon, they lost to the Hornets. Like, the Rockets are going through it as well. So you are not the only team in the Western Conference that is struggling. The Jazz are starting to get it together, but the Rockets are really struggling. They're back to the 5th seed. They're 2 back of Denver. Denver is almost definitely going to have tiebreaker. Denver's got conference tiebreaker almost secured there, which means that because they split the season series 2-2, it's going to go a conference record, and Denver will have that. Utah is only 1 back of Denver. That's a bigger concern, right? And Utah will definitely push to the end, and Utah can rack up a lot of wins if they keep playing like they have and if they beat the teams that are legitimately bad. Now, look, they almost lost to several of these teams. Like, they almost lost to the Pistons. The Pistons came back on them. The Jazz not playing great, but they're getting it done. The Nuggets are not getting it done right now. The Thunder are three back. They're not going to catch. They're starting to regress a little bit. You can see that coming. The Mavericks are four back. They're not going to catch. They're good, but they're going to lose enough. So the Nuggets are going to make the playoffs. Their magic number, just for, so you feel better about it, is only six. Like, there's no chance. There's no scenario the Nuggets do not make the playoffs. That has been inked. They are going to make the playoffs. And I feel pretty strongly they're going to wind up with a top three seed. I think they're going to be the three, which makes sense, right? Like, if we started the season and I told you the Nuggets finished third, you would not be that upset. Like, you just wouldn't be. You'd be like, well, it's probably the two LA teams and the Nuggets, right? That's what it's going to be. It's going to be the two LA teams and the Nuggets. The last Clippers game matters a lot. They need to get some confidence back. They got rattled. They got shook. They got bullied. They got punked. They need to win the last Clippers game. That's the biggest game remaining on their schedule. Okay? Like, I have no way to... I can't sugarcoat that. I can't get around it. I'm not saying that they can't win a series if they don't win that game. It's going to be really hard. I have covered the sport enough to know that regular seasons don't matter. Regular season matchups don't matter if the team that loses knows it's better. Denver does not know it's better than the Clippers, and that's why that game matters. Like, typically, I don't really care about the regular season matchups. This one I care about considerably. All right. So, they lose to Cleveland. They got Milwaukee on Monday. They're at Dallas, at San Antonio, at the Lakers. They're going to go 2-1 in that stretch, too. Like, they're going to go, even if they lose the game to Cleveland, to Milwaukee, they stop the bleeding. They will win either versus Dallas or San Antonio. They're going to lose at LA. That's going to happen. The Lakers are gunning for it and getting into playoff mode, etc. Unless LeBron rests that game, which would be a pretty solid power move, they're going to lose that game. It's in LA. That's on the 15th. Home game versus the Clippers. They got Lakers, Clippers, Thunder, Raptors, and then things kind of lighten up a little bit. They got Chicago, Miami, San Antonio, Oklahoma, Golden State, Chicago again, Utah, Memphis, Portland, Sacramento, Dallas, Utah at the end of the year. I list these games because, like, after this week, once you get through next Sunday, okay, you're through all of the tough games except for the Clippers game. Everything after that is, like, a winnable game. The at Lakers and Clippers games are the only two where I'm like, Denver's probably going to lose those. They should be favored. They won't be favored versus the Raptors if everybody's healthy. But they should be favored in every other game to finish the season. That's the rest of the... Their Denver's schedule is very tough, but it's top-loaded, and you want it top-loaded. You want it now so that you can just, like... A bunch of these Western Conference teams are going to be out of the playoffs. Portland's looking dead in the water. I'm sure everybody's happy to hear that. Portland's looking dead in the water. They are now... five back of the Grizzlies in the loss column with a big game coming on Thursday. They lose that one. Memphis wins tiebreaker, and it's done for Portland. Portland is sunk. So Portland's on the edge. Sacramento's hanging in there, but may very well be out by the time that game rolls around. Dallas will have secured its seeding, and Utah will have secured its seeding in those final two games. They've got Chicago twice in a two-week span. They've got Oklahoma, and they've got Golden State again. And I know that everybody's going to be like, well, they lost to Golden State. Again, how Nuggets would it be to lose to Golden State without everybody and then win versus Curry and Draymond? Pretty likely. I think it's pretty likely. So I like their chances in the March 31st game. It's not good that they're going through this. They will play better. They've had good stretches and bad stretches this year. Part of what's happening now, in the early part of the year, they played badly, and they somehow found ways to win. They're playing badly right now, and they're not finding ways to win. But it's a long season. We've still got 19 games left, and there's time for them to finish strong. And then, like I talked about with Adam, the biggest thing is just they're going to have to back up the talk. They're telling us that they don't need these games, that they're a playoff team, and they don't need them. I, for one, am anxious either way to see them answer that in the affirmative or fail miserably, which will lead to big, big off-season changes. All right, that's it for this episode. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. Follow all of the great Locked On content at Locked On NBA Net. And I will talk to you guys again next week with another edition of Locked On Nuggets.